This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, all my wonderful, incredible, and absolutely beautiful friends. Welcome to Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek into the real world of scientists, engineers, and artists as they solve problems in their jobs using curiosity, critical thinking, and creativity. My name is Jed Lee. Please welcome to the show my partner in exploration, the dean of all things STEM and STEAM, Jennifer Swanson.
Hello, Jed. Today, we are going to answer the question,
how do you compose music that is as big as the universe?
And here, as our guest to solve this problem, is world-famous conductor and composer Eric Whitaker. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Hello. Thank you.
So if I can say, I was honored to meet Eric last year at the World Science Festival, where we both performed at the, what was it, the Saturday night event, Under the Stars?
That's right.
That was just spectacular.
New York, overlooking the city.
Yes, at the Brooklyn Bridge Park in New York City. It was so amazing, and Eric performed his Deep Field there, Under the Stars, and we're going to talk about his composition, Deep Field, and if you ever get a chance to hear it in full orchestra, go. It is not to be missed.
Thank you. Yeah, it was an incredible night. And what I was most amazed by was how many thousands of people came out to see this. The World Science Festival and all these families and young people. And it was really, it was exciting to see that many science nerds like us.
Yes, exactly. And it was funny because I was doing my astronaut aquanaut presentation. And, you know, you kind of look down and you just see a couple hundred people in the stadium that was, or the seats that were there. And then about halfway through, I look up and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a couple thousand people here now.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, no pressure.
And really listening really into it. They were excited by it. And you remember there were a couple astronauts there that night? You know.
Yes. Yes. I met them too, in addition to you.
Yeah.
It was cool. Well, Eric is here to help us solve the problem. How do you get an orchestra to play beautiful music? Now, of course, we all think this is easy, right? You just stand up there, you raise your hands, and poof, it all happens. Is that how it works?
Not quite. Although that's what the musicians in the orchestra would like you to think. So it starts actually before anybody even shows up at the rehearsal. Where it starts is with the composer alone in her or his room. And they're sitting with their piano and a big piece of sheet music that's blank and a pencil.
Oh, wow.
And they have to dream up all of this music. And so it's not enough to just come up with a nice melody or some nice chords. You've got to build a whole piece. How do you want it to start? How do you want it to end? What is the journey you want to take the audience on? And then you have to write every single person's part. So, for instance, if you're the flute player, and you're sitting there, you're not looking at other people's parts. You have no idea what the violin is going to play. You don't know what the percussionist will play. You only know your little part. So sometimes you might rest for four measures and you're waiting one, two, three. Then you play, but literally you come in. That's just your part. But that composer has to decide when and what everybody on stage is going to play.
Oh my gosh. That's almost worse than writing a book, I think. unless you have hundreds of characters in your book.
Yeah, it's very complicated, and to see all of it being done together. So the conductor, the person who stands up there and waves their arm, they're the only person who sees everybody's part at the same time. So they've got that big score, and that's really something to look at. Once the composer is finished with it, and you look at that score and you can see how this whole thing is going to play out.
Wow.
It's amazing that someone can come up with that, can write that kind of thing. So because I'm a composer and a conductor, I start by writing all of the music, writing what each person will have to play. And then when that's all finished, each person gets their part. We hand them out. They put them on their stand. And then I stand in front of the group. And that's when I raise my arms for the first time.
Yeah, Eric. I know a lot of kids that are listening are really familiar with and the kind of music they listen to is, kind of rock and pop. And so when you're talking about a group, they might be thinking, oh, you're talking about guitar, bass, and drums, maybe a keyboard. Man, maybe a horn. How many people are you talking? How many musicians are you talking about?
Well, there's a typical orchestra would have 85 musicians on stage.
Wow.
And half of those are strings, the violins and the cellos and the basses, and then half are everyone else. But then a lot of pieces, especially the ones I write, have orchestra and then a choir behind them. And usually a choir, in order to be heard over an orchestra, is double the size of the orchestra. So usually you'd have an 85-piece orchestra on stage and 150 singers standing behind them.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
Yeah, it's 230, 240 people on stage. And okay. So as the conductor, that's quite a challenge to get all of them to move at the same time.
So how many different pieces do you have to write? Like, you write ones for all of the strings together, or do you write them for different, like violins versus cellos versus...
Yeah, that's right. So typically you have first violin, second violin, violas, cellos, and basses. That's just the strings. But almost always, that's five, but almost always you split the first and second violins. So there can be seven or eight parts just for the violins. Then you have flute one, two, and three. They each get their own part. Then you get oboe one, two, and three. They each get their own part. Clarinet one, two, and three. They each get their own part. Bassoon one, two, and three. They each get their own part. Then you have French horns one, two, three, and four. Trumpets one, two, and three. Trombones one, two, and three. And tuba. And then that's when you get to percussion. So you've got timpani and cymbals and snare drums and piano gets their own part and harp gets their own part. So when you're looking at a score, you can have as many as 30 or 40 instruments all lined up, different parts, everyone playing something different.
And since you're a composer, all of this comes from your head.
Yeah. Hopefully. When it's going well, it comes
wow.
from.
Okay. How do you compose that? I mean, like, where do you start? I would be so afraid, like, to just put a note on the page. Like, oh my gosh, am I starting in the wrong place?
Yeah, it's exactly the hardest part of composing is the beginning when you're looking at a completely blank piece of paper. And what do you do? Where do you start? Usually for me, I start with what I call the golden brick. And for me, the golden brick is a very simple musical idea that has just a few notes in it that then has all of the kind of the DNA, all of the magic in it that will make an entire piece. For me, probably the most famous and best golden brick in all of classical music is only four notes long. It goes ba-ba-ba-bum. Beethoven wrote it, and it's the beginning of the Fifth Symphony. But what's incredible is not only does the entire first movement just use da 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 da, just uses that little motive, but all four movements use some version of those four notes. So it's really about 40 minutes worth of music that he's able to build around those four notes.
Okay. So do you try to do something similar in your composition?
I do. I try to start with something that, and for me, it's very emotional. So it's a chord or just a couple of notes that mean something. They mean something intuitively, and they speak to my heart. So if I find them on the piano and I play a chord and hear that, that's what that feels. So with Deep Field, I found this one big chord that has all these notes in it, just a single chord. And for me, that sounded the way that I feel when I look at that Deep Field image. I feel the sense of wonder and awe. And then once I know I've got that, then I can start to build a whole piece.
Right. Well, and to let our listeners know, if you're not familiar with Deep Field is the amazing discovery made by the Hubble telescope, where they looked way, way, way far out in the galaxy, and they discovered, 150? I'm trying to remember. How many?
So they took just the smallest sliver of the sky.
Right.
That to Earth-bound telescopes, there was nothing there, right? It was completely dark.
Yes.
And the Hubble, because it's up above Earth, can see further and clearer. And they collected light for 11 days. And when they got the image back, there were 3,000 galaxies.
That's right.
Galaxies, not stars. Each one of those galaxies full of hundreds of billions of stars. It's the most extraordinary image. You can find it online very easily. It's called.
Yeah, it's an amazing image. And then so you were so moved by that you created a composition for it, an entire orchestra.
Yeah, I wanted to somehow like capture the way I felt, which is really wonder and awe. It makes the universe is so profoundly big that I wanted to make something that that helped audiences feel that same thing. And the best way to do that is have a huge orchestra and a huge choir. So you get the scale of the, you know, of the universe. And so that's how I set out to do that, is to write this piece. And also the piece then, I knew that it would move very, very, very slowly. I was trying to convey this idea of time moving so slowly and these great distances.
Eric, now I know there's different music that makes me feel different ways. And so I understand that music can really bring up these emotions, but it just happens for me. It's like I hear something, it makes me feel this way. Do you know, if I want people to feel wonder, I need to play these chords. If I want somebody to feel happy, I need to play at this tempo. Or is it just something intuitive?
It's more, I've often wondered that. I don't really know how to get other people to feel it. All I know is if I can make something that makes me feel it, generally other people feel it. So that's the only compass I have is myself. When I'm writing a piece of music, if it takes my breath away or makes me excited, then usually it also makes audiences excited.
So we're back to composing. So do you have an order in which you write these? You know, if you're going to write for the strings or you're going to write for the percussion, or does it, you just do it how it comes to you?
It's a super good question. I don't know.
Well, that's almost like people asking me, how do I write a book? You just do it, right?
Yeah, right. You know, well, it's great that the podcast is called Solve It, because for me, that's all composition is solving problems. So there's the big idea, right? But most of composing is solving small problems. And so what I'll do is I'll sit down in the morning and say, okay, I know that I'm going to try to get from here to here. It might only be 10 seconds worth of music, but how do I bridge that? I know what it needs to do. I know what its function is. It needs to get from here to here. But then solving it and trying to make it as simple and elegant as possible, that's the real challenge. And so I spend most of my day then just solving small problems. In my mind, what I think of it is that really all I'm doing is just putting one brick at a time in the wall. If I ever stopped for a moment and looked at the entire wall or an entire building that I'm making, I'd be too overwhelmed. It's just, I couldn't do it. But if all I have to do today is concentrate on this brick and that break, just solve those problems. Then after days and weeks, I step back and then look up, oh, I made an entire wall. Hey, it works, right? It's mostly small problem solving.
When you're putting those bricks in and you're getting frustrated, do you ever start singing the all I am is just another brick in the wall?
Yes. Yeah, Pink Floyd knew what they were doing, definitely.
Well, so how long does this take you to compose, you know, an entire piece?
So a big piece like that, Deep Field, which is 23 minutes long, and for orchestra and for choir, probably took me a year to write. Yeah, I'm kind of a slow composer. Some of the famous composers, Bach and Mozart, they wrote so fast you can't imagine. It's almost like they wrote faster than I could take, than I could write it down if I were just sitting over their shoulder, just writing it down as they wrote it. But I'm a very slow composer. And so it took me a long time. Also, it's never perfect the first time for me. So I'll write a version of it, even if it's say 2 minutes of it. And then I'll go back and look at it and then, nope, I need to fix all of that or throw that away or fix this, fix that. So there's a lot of, solving and fixing, solving, fixing.
Do you do all this on the piano, or do you actually have access to the different instruments?
No, it's really tough. You don't get the instruments. And orchestras are very expensive. Really, like a professional orchestra.
So you don't get to rent an orchestra and have them play it back for you.
I wish. I mean, even for like a 3-hour rehearsal with an orchestra can cost $30,000 or $40,000.
Wow.
Yeah, so you can't just rent them to see if it works. You have to kind of know before you go there. And so what I do is I do some of it on the piano, and then I do the rest of it in my head. So a lot of my day looks like me just taking showers or taking long walks or sitting, staring off into space, trying to imagine an orchestra and what it will sound like and how it will feel when I'm there.
That's one of the things that a lot of our guests have said so far, is that when you're presented with the problem, instead of stressing about and banging your head against the wall and how do I do this? It's so much better to take a breath. One of our engineering friends said, try to ask yourself, do you really know what the question is? You really know what you're trying to solve here? And just kind of relax, take a breath. And when you do that relaxing, a lot of times that your just creative juices flow a lot better.
It's so true. But it's not so easy, right? It's so easy to say it, but boy, because the thing is too, I'm sure your other guests were like this. When I'm writing a piece of music, so I've got maybe a nice idea at the beginning. Here's a piece I want to write about, this deep field image, and I want it to be great. But every step along the way, the piece can fall apart. I might make a decision, and then the piece actually won't work anymore. And so it feels, if we go back to the metaphor of building this big building, brick by brick, there's this sense that if you don't get the bricks right as you're making them, the whole wall will collapse. and so there's this kind of, you want to just let it go and have fun making bricks, but at the same time, you also don't want to wait 6 months of your life writing something that then you get it with the orchestra and, oh, that's terrible. That doesn't work at all. So it's really hard to just let yourself go in those moments, I find.
Well, so that's what I want to know. So you've worked on this composition for a year. Now you're ready to try it in front of an orchestra. Are you nervous? Like, what if it doesn't work?
Yeah, I'm so nervous. Like, so nervous that I want to be sick. That nervous. Even after I've been doing this for so many years, every time it makes me that nervous. Then, though, because I'm also conducting, so now I'm the person who stands in front of them and has to give a breath, and I have to let all of that composer part go. I can't be there up there as a composer anymore. I'm now a leader.